Adventures with Words is brought to you by Audible. Try Audible free for 30 days and download any audiobook for free. To start your free trial, go to www.adventureswithwords.com/audible.
Hello and welcome to Adventures with Words, where we explore storytelling in all its forms. I'm Rob.
I'm Kate.
And this week is the second of our book club programmes, where we'll be discussing The Night Circus by Erin Morgenstern.
The Night Circus is Erin Morgenstern's first book. It's about the Night Circus. The circus is a result of a competition, a challenge between two rival magicians, Hector Bowen, who's also known as Prospero, it's his stage name, and another kind of shadowy figure who is sometimes known as Alexander, sometimes referred to as the man in the grey suit, and his business card says something like Mr. A.H., but it's never quite clear what it is. These two characters are in the process of a kind of challenge between the two of them, which involves training up protégés, if you like, in their method of using magic or enchantment or however you'd like to refer to it. And then they pit these students against each other to try to prove whose version of magic is the most successful. And this is obviously something that's been going on for a long time, although we only really get an idea of how long it's been going on much later in the book. These particular pair of students are called Celia, that's Hector's daughter, and Marco, who is an orphan who Mr. A.H. Plucks from obscurity.
He sort of auditions them as well, doesn't he?
Yes.
He has there's a scene where he's in the orphanage and he calls various children into, you don't see what's going on. And then Marco is the lucky or not so lucky one that he's selected.
He obviously has some kind of talent that the man in the grey suit identifies. And the two men then train up these young people in their own special ways. I think neither of them is particularly happy or particularly enjoys their training. And, you know, they're very, very different. Marco is left alone for the majority of time with books and has sort of an hour's tutorial, if you like, with the man in the grey suit every day. But the rest of the time is sort of learning sort of charms and spells and formulae and so on. Whereas Celia has a much more hands-on training. She talks later about her father saying you should do things from the inside out, whereas the way Marco's been taught is sort of from the outside in. There's some quite sort of chilling scenes. There's a part where Hector grabs her arm and seems to kind of break the bones in her hand.
He also slices her fingertips open.
Until she can just heal them by will, kind of thing. So, yeah, it's quite sinister, quite chilling. And then as the story goes on, the two young people grow up and they begin to sort of demonstrate, show off their skill in the circus. The circus is their venue for their contest.
Yes, Marco's employed by a sort of theatrical producer, I suppose you could call him that, Chandres Lefebvre. So that if you talk about the Night Circus itself for a little bit, it's not your standard one giant tent, clowns and elephants, that sort of thing.
No.
It's much more, it's very different, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's completely different. It does have some of the aspects that we would recognise of a circus. You know, there is a contortionist, there are people doing tricks, there's a fortune teller and so on. But all of these tents have something magical about them. Each of them is constructed as a way for either Celia or Marco to show what they can do in some way. And Marco has a big hand in the initial creation of the circus, and then Celia is hired as the illusionist. So Marco, if you like, kind of makes the first move. Celia responds by going to the illusionist auditions and so on. So they're kind of taking turns, adding a new aspect time and time again to the circus.
And there's another character who's a young boy called Bailey, who is sort of our eyes and ears into the circus. The idea of the circus itself is that you wander in, it only opens at night, called the Night Circus, and you pick a tent, and there's different things in each tent, and as the book goes on and the sort of illusions or the sort of what's inside the tent escalates, it's Bailey and often the other patrons who it's through them that we see what's going on.
Yeah, there's a, you know, there's quite a lot of different perspectives within the book, which is one thing that perhaps some people found took something away from it a little bit, because it is very sort of spread out almost in that way. So you've got Celia and Marco, but it's really kind of woven around them. So we don't really see the circus through their eyes particularly. You've got, I mean, Bailey visits the circus, I think 3 or 4 times over the course of the book, but when you actually read his parts as he travels through, they're interspersed right the way throughout.
Yeah.
So the first time he visits, we hear more about the kind of smells and the food, because he's very young. And then sort of as he goes back again when he's a bit older, we find out more about the different tents he goes into, the different sort of spectacles that he sees. And obviously each time he goes back, more has been added to the circus. So there are more different things to explore. So, yeah, we kind of explore it through his eyes and through the eyes of what are called the rêveurs, the dreamers, which is the name for the kind of fan club in the story of people who kind of follow the circus around. They only wear black and white, because the whole circus is themed in black and white, except for a token of red, which sort of marks them out from the circus performers.
Well, the book's been rather successful. It was first published in America to glowing reviews, and it then came out over here. It's also been optioned as a film. One label that's been put out is Harry Potter for grown-ups. Is that one that you agree with? It's not one that I do.
Not particularly, no. I think, I mean, for one thing, it's not a series, it's a standalone book, and Erin Morgenstern was very clear that, you know, she wasn't aiming it at young people. It was aimed at adults, whereas obviously Harry Potter isn't. I think perhaps people said that because of the magical element of it, which obviously this does have, but I think it's very different in tone. It's not anywhere near as kind of clear cut as Harry Potter. No. Harry Potter is good versus evil. It's very clear cut. You know who's a goodie, you know who's a baddie, you know, apart from one or two, you know, who we're not sure right up until the end. But for, you know, for the majority, you know where you stand, you know who you support. The Night Circus is not like that at all. The circus may be themed in black and white, but in terms of the characters, you know, with the exception of maybe one or two, it's very much shades of grey. You're not quite sure who you can trust. We were talking about this earlier, and there's a particular part in the book where, although Celia was, you know, the first real character that you met, and when she was younger, you did sympathise her. There was a part in the book where she does something, and my first reaction wasn't, oh, okay, so she's going to solve a problem with this. It was actually assuming that she's stabbing someone in the back.
Yeah.
So obviously you don't sort of sympathise with her, or in fact, I think with Marco, in the same way that you would with Harry and Ron and Hermione. You know, they're not necessarily 100% good. And equally, you know, they're pitted against each other, and neither of them has really done anything to deserve that. You know, they're both just trying to play out whatever game this might be. They don't really know what the rules are. So I think there are a lot of flaws with that kind of analogy there. I don't know, why did you disagree with it?
I thought it was perhaps shortchanging it in a way. I think Harry Potter also, I mean, the thing about Harry Potter is it's all over one school year. It's very defined. You can almost, you know what's almost going to happen next. And just because it's got two battling magicians, I don't think you should automatically call it Harry Potter.
No.
The book is very vivid. I think, you know, the writing, some of the description is absolutely beautiful when they're creating their illusions for one another. They become sort of love letters for each other to be explored. And just, I never once thought Harry Potter when I was reading
this. It didn't remind me of that at all. I think if there are other books which it did remind me of a lot more, the one that we both, you know, the one that we talked about and is something where we were looking at some reviews of it and that they mentioned as well, is Jonathan Norrell and Mr. Strange by Susanna Clarke, which is something I read quite a while ago. I think probably pretty close to when it came out, and I enjoyed that very much.
I really want to read this now. Yeah,
and I mean, I know you haven't read it yet, but I definitely recommend it. Something else it kind of reminded me of was Carter Beats the Devil, because, you know, that, again, you've got the idea of kind of rival magicians and outdoing each other and so on. But again, it's a lot less clear cut. You know, you're not quite sure what's going on. It's got that mystery element. The Night Circus has got a big mystery element to it. You're not quite sure what this challenge is. What will happen if someone wins? What will happen if someone loses? And as it goes on, it does become a lot more clear. And I think some people will guess quicker than others. I think I was so absorbed in it that I didn't really sort of think about trying to guess what the result might be. But yeah, I think the mystery element is a big part of this, where again, I think in Harry Potter, it's kind of, right, let's defeat the baddie and move on.
Well, it's basically also the Night Circus is not aimed at children.
No, it
isn't. It's a book for adults. There's an adult romance going on in the book. So I had a look at some of the reviews. They weren't quite so glowing over here. Now, The Guardian called it creakily plotted.
I don't know. I think that's a bit harsh.
One of the criticisms that they made, which I also tend to agree with, was that the main resolution of the story, which is the battle between Celia and Marco, is actually resolved a bit too early for my liking. It just felt a bit wrapped up, which was the main thing that was, for me, was what was driving it forward.
Yeah, I think it's difficult because obviously the main thrust of the narrative is obviously the game, the challenge, because that's what the whole book has been focused on right from the very beginning, before we even knew what the challenge was. The first thing that we really see is the meeting between Hector and the man in the grey suit, where they're discussing setting up the challenge, and they're talking about who their protege is going to be. And we see this from the point of view of Celia when she's very, very young, kind of eavesdropping the conversation. But then again, there is another aspect to the book, which is where Bailey comes in, the young man who is in Massachusetts and sort of comes into the circus. And linked in with him is this idea of keeping the circus going, because obviously as they add these tents and add more and more to the circus, you've got the original group of people, because it isn't just Celia and Marco, there's a whole group of people who've put their lives into the circus. There's all the people who visit it, these revers, the fans, if you like, the families of the performers and so on. So it starts to become a balance between the challenge that between Celia and Marco and keeping alive this circus for all the people who have so much invested in it. So I think there is that needs to be resolved at the end as well. I guess I wasn't as critical, I think, as you were of the way that the ending works, but I can see that perhaps it would have kept the tension up to resolve those things sort of more at the same time, if you
like. That's what I was expecting.
Instead of one after the other.
Is it to be resolved at the end? Because once it had been resolved, yes. I mean, I did like the Bailey plot, the subplot. He was our eyes and ears. Now, one criticism is that it feels to some that he's sort of been dropped in afterwards, sort of hastily added in. But for me, I like Bailey. And for me as well, I actually enjoyed the whole cast of characters. For me, Celia and Marco weren't necessarily, even though they were really our protagonists, I didn't think they were really the most interesting of the characters.
No, I mean, it's an interesting book in terms of the way it is structured, you know, in terms of the way it's plotted and the way that the different characters all have their own piece to play. I think to call it creakily plotted, I think maybe that is a bit harsh. But, I know from what I've read about the book that the first version of it was completely different to what it ended up as at the end. You know, she wrote the book, I think, really initially just about Celia and Marco, and then realised that there were all these interesting characters who really hadn't been covered at all. And it became much more of a kind of ensemble piece, if you like, because all of the characters have a really interesting story.
Well, a circus is an ensemble, and I think if you didn't have the characters around, it wouldn't be as interesting. It does jump around in time a lot, which I did like. You never quite know what's going to happen next.
Yeah, and I think it works well in terms of sort of ramping up the tension, because you've got possibly things not necessarily going to plan with the more current dates, but then you're still working your way towards that point with this, the rivalry / romance between Celia and Marco. So it's, you know, how does it get to this point where things aren't quite going well? You know, what is it that's gone wrong, or, you know, what is it about the challenge that's causing it to happen? So, yeah, I thought that worked really nicely, although I know one of the reviews that we read, the person really didn't like it jumping around between time frames. They obviously wanted something more linear. But then they did also say that they tend to read lots of historical fiction, which I guess you don't tend to jump around in.
I don't think a book like this, which does cover quite a large time span, it necessarily needs to be linear.
No, I don't either. And I think you and I are both possibly more used to reading things that don't necessarily just go in a linear fashion. I mean, I didn't have any problem with it.
Because it takes in a large time span. It takes in a number of locations. The circus sort of travels around the world.
Yeah.
Another criticism was it's baggily imagined. There's one way that they used to describe it.
And I think that point probably comes quite well from what you were just saying there about the fact that it does go to lots of different locations. I do think possibly the world outside the circus was quite baggily imagined. Mm. It's an odd phrase, but I do think I know what the person means in that really, you know, the circus itself, which is obviously a kind of fantastical setting, is incredibly vivid. It's so well drawn. You know, I could picture it, you know, really, I could completely imagine it in my head. Similarly, the inside of Chandresh's house in London, I could picture those rooms, the great ballrooms, the offices stuffed with all these different knickknacks and odds and ends and so on. You know, even Marco's flat all filled with plans and so on. But in terms of London or Paris or Munich or New York or whatever, although supposedly the circus stops in all these places and more, really, what we get of those places at the end of the 1800s is minimal.
They all felt the same to me.
Yeah, I don't feel we really got any
London
sense.
And Paris just felt exactly the same. There was no sense of place for me.
No, I mean, the only place that stood out was Bailey's home.
Yeah,
because that's in the countryside. And, you know, and they talk about sheep and an orchard and being up a tree and going across a field. Whereas otherwise, I didn't get any sense of place. And I mean, also I found things which I thought were probably wrong. There's a part where Marco meets Isabel, who becomes the fortune teller, and he takes her to what's described as a cafe where they have sort of fruit and a baguette and whatever. And I just remember thinking, I'm quite sure at that time in London, you wouldn't be having a baguette
and
a nice French red wine.
Sort of bohemian lifestyle, wasn't it?
Well, it is, but I think it's evoking it wrongly.
It didn't feel right for me.
You know, it really sort of rang untrue. And with the rest of it, I was willing to go with it because I think a lot about the book is about what is real. Is the imaginary world real, or is it kind of day-to-day life? And I think it's heading towards an idea that your imaginary life can be just as real as, you know, day-to-day. But you know, that kind of thing, if you're going to mention something like that, which is quite a precise detail, for it to jar that much, I think she needed to do a bit more research there. I think that's what it says to me. She didn't mention any kind of historical detail. She didn't mention any, you know, even just some landmarks of the different cities would have
been
good.
That was a bit odd. And it also never really talks about anything that happens out sort of historically outside of the circus.
I mean, this was such a rich time in history. Yeah. There was so much that was going on, you know, technological advances, all sorts of things, you know, wars, and none of that's touched on at all, which is a bit odd.
It did seem strange. But maybe she really just wants to put her focus on the circus.
Yeah, I think in which case, possibly there needed to be less focus on when exactly it was. Perhaps she needed to do less in terms of dates. I don't know. It's difficult, isn't it? Maybe if she'd just been relying on the present 10 years ago, 50 years ago, etc., that would have been more confusing for the chronological jumps. I don't know.
I just think a bit of context would have been nice.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I think it would have been easier to put in the historical context. So something that we touched on, and which is one of the other criticisms from the reviews, was that although it's, you know, visually very vivid and stimulating, the main characters, by which I guess they mean Celia and Marco, get a bit lost. They're a bit underdeveloped as characters. What did you think about that, Rob?
I enjoyed the sections where they were performing the magic and the illusions that they created. They were just, some of those sections were just absolutely beautiful. But when they weren't doing the magic, there were times where I didn't feel particularly engaged with them. I actually wanted to spend more time with the large cast of characters around them. I don't know quite what that was, but there needed to be something more about them for me to be interested in.
And they were kind of all about the struggle, really, weren't they? Rather than anything about themselves personally. Well, who would you rather have spent time with then?
I really enjoyed Chandresh Lefebvre. He's the sort of brains, he creates the circus. He's a very theatrical character. He has midnight dinners where he invites guests, and it's sort of is a high point on the social calendar to be invited to one of his. He then goes on to employ Marco and creates the circus. There are other characters. You had Poppet and Widget. They're born on opening night, the twins. Mm-hmm. They spend their entire life in the circus. They go on to perform with kittens.
Because their parents are the big cat trainers sort of thing, like the lion tamers and so on. But
so for me, it was interesting with them. Instead. They're born into the circus. They don't know anything else apart from that. Mm-hmm. I'm watching them and how they interact quite a bit with Bailey, who was another character that I liked. He's our eyes and ears, as I've said. And Bailey becomes absorbed in the circus.
Yeah.
He's given a choice of either working on the farm or going to Harvard, and he doesn't want to do either. So what's he left to do? So there's other characters as well. I know, for example, you liked one of the characters, Isabel, the fortune teller.
Yeah, we mentioned her earlier. She becomes the fortune teller at the circus, but the reason she originally goes there is because she's fallen in love with Marco, and she's going to be his eyes and ears, because as you said, he's employed by Chandresh, so he's there with him in London. He doesn't travel around with the circus, so she's his woman on the ground, if you like. But then, you know, she also becomes absorbed into the web of the circus. She has been taught some magic by Marco before she goes, and she's kind of using that in her fortune telling. She reads tarot cards. And I found her a really interesting character, how she is, again, an outsider coming in, and the way that it draws her in and she becomes part of it. And I kind of was rooting for her a little bit, to be honest, in that kind of love triangle.
I felt that Marco, I didn't like Marco because of Isabel. I felt that he was using her.
Yeah, you know, I think he's
using her to spy on Celia, and straight away.
They were both, Celia and Marco, both quite manipulative characters at different times. Although I guess you can kind of forgive them for that, because they've been...
Well, they're in a game, aren't they?
You know, they've been brought up. They both know they're playing a game in some way. They guess that their opponent is the other one. And so, you know, they are playing each other to some extent. But yeah, then other people are starting to get hurt because of that. It's quite difficult to decide who you really can sympathise with.
Well, I think it's safe to say that we both really enjoyed this book.
Yeah, I did.
What I got from it was that classic line, running away to the circus, because I think this is about, to an extent, escapism. Mm-hmm. How important escapism is to people, to step through the circus into the tents, and you're leaving your troubles behind. It's a magical world in a number of senses. And it's always important to have some escapism, some fantasy, to sort of balance out, you know, sometimes the pretty miserable reality of our lives, I think.
I mean, I agree with that, definitely. But I think it's also about the idea of appearances as well, because there are so many different levels of appearance, so many different surfaces in the book. And it's a lot about sort of trying to peel away those surfaces to get at what is real underneath. So, you know, I do agree, you know, this idea, it's important to have something in reserve. It's important to have somewhere to escape to. But I think it's important not to forget that escape is actually a way of coping with real life.
Yeah.
And it's not an alternative. It's not an end in itself. Because I think a lot of the problems in the book come from where people look at the magic and the enchantment and the layers as an end in themselves. You know, to do the illusion, that's enough. Well, no, it isn't, because by doing something that actually affects everyone else, it makes them think something different or believe something different. You know, it affects all those kind of key players in various different and often negative ways.
Well, it's a bit cause and effect. I mean, it is a game between Marco and Celia.
Yeah.
One of them does an illusion. The other one then has to respond.
Yeah.
And that there is an actual effect
to what's
happening. It's sort
of like a ripple effect out from that. So, yeah, I think it's, you know, it's really important for people to have some fantasy, some imagination, but it's not an alternative to real life. It's a complement to real life, if you like. So there's a lot about appearance and reality. We were sort of looking at something earlier to do, you know, comparing it to other books, and one of the things that it sort of suggested a comparison to is Frankenstein, which at first seems a bizarre idea. But actually, when you think about it, it's about how you express your inner self. And, you know, Frankenstein did that in a pretty gruesome way, and it came back and kicked him in the bum because he didn't look after it properly. But, you know, there's the two aspects of this book, you know, the magic and the creating of the illusions, of the creating of the beautiful things, but then also that kind of more practical thing of dealing with the consequences of them as well. And I think both of those things are there. And, you know, their expression of themselves in the beautiful things they make, but also realizing that your actions do have consequences. And both of them, actually, once they realize that, do their best to try to, well, first of all, limit the damage, and then to, you know, to, as we said, to kind of keep the circus going. So, you know, I think in the end, it is a very positive book, and it has a very positive message. And, you know, I really enjoyed reading it. I'm not trying to say it's really deep necessarily. I don't, you know, I'm not saying it's got a moral to teach us all, but I think certainly it's really interesting on a kind of philosophical level, if you want to look at it in that way.
I thought it was a very well written, with some absolutely vivid passages.
Yeah.
Despite the circus, the entire circus is in black and white. You still get the sense of the beauty and the scale of what they're creating. I thought the battle between them, which then becomes a love story, I thought that was fascinating. And then the characters around them were just, I really enjoyed it.
It was just so immersive, I think. I found myself really sort of drawn into this whole world. I could have pictured myself there. I could have drawn it, as you know, as I said, it was so vivid in passages. And I think, you know, it does have shortcomings. It isn't perfect, you know. As we said, the world outside the circus could be a lot more precise. Possibly the way that the two elements are resolved in the end could be a bit more neat. There could have been more tension perhaps, but even so, I really enjoyed it.
I can't really criticise it much more. I just think that I would have liked to spend perhaps more time with Celia and Marco, got to know them a bit better, and that the ending resolved in a slightly different manner without trying to say too much.
Yeah, absolutely. If you've read the book and you'd like to send us your thoughts on it, you can do that in a variety of ways. We'd love to hear from you. You can tweet us. We're at Word Adventures. You can like our Facebook page and leave us a message there. You can also go to our blog. It's www.adventureswithwords.com, and you can also subscribe to the podcast and hear our future discussions via iTunes. Our next book club book is Pigeon English by Stephen Kelman. We'll be discussing that in roughly a month's time, so if you want to read along and see if you agree with us, then please do. And apart from that, it's just time to say I've been Kate.
I've been Rob.
And goodbye. Adventures with Words is brought to you by Audible. Try Audible free for 30 days and download any audiobook for free. To start your free trial, go to www.adventureswithwords.com/audible.